Hello, I'm Tara Singh, and we are discussing international business environment. As we've seen, India is a very, very active and eager participant in the global trade. We have a long way to go in terms of enhancing our position in world trade. Having said that, post-liberalization, we have made leaps and bounds in the global trading arena. We have already become the 8th largest exporter in the world when it comes to services. So we have we have the potential, we have the skill set, we have the labor, we have low cost manpower, so we can leverage all of those things to become an even larger participant in global trade. Now, when we are talking about global trade, then two of the major backbones of global trade are the World Trade Organization and the GATT. Now, the World Trade Organization was established in 1995 via the Uruguay round of negotiations and discussions, which went on for 8 years. It accounts for practically 98% of world trade. Practically everyone is a member, and 98% of the world trade is accounted for through the World Trade Organization, which is the watchdog for goods and exports trade, exports and imports of goods and services across the globe. India has been a member. So when it comes to the WTO is headquartered in Geneva. And to give you an idea of the magnitude of what comes under the purview of WTO, in 2023, they had a budget of 197 million Swiss francs for carrying out their activities of promoting, monitoring, resolution, standardizing that they do to enable global trade to work smoothly and seamlessly. Now, clearly, when it comes to developed nations versus developing nations, then developed nations tend to have a stronger voice and a more influential role when it comes to what is included in WTO charters, what is included in GATT charters, and hence what benefits, which industries, which regions, which countries stand to benefit from that. Having said that, even though India is a developing country, in terms of per capita income, if you see, we are still among the lower income countries, even though we have some excessively wealthy people. However, when it comes to per capita income, then we are still in the lower income group. Because of that, it does not mean that India does not have a voice. India has a very strong voice in the WTO. Despite being a developing country, India has taken very strong stands when it comes to industries like the textile industry, IT industry, financial services industry. And India has, as a result, not only been able to get the WTO to include certain industries in its charter and certain practices in its charter, which would benefit India, but India has also become a very strong voice who has received respect world over, including strong statements from heads of WTO, appreciating how India is very, very specific and very serious about holistic growth and takes these stands, especially when it comes to industries which are vital for its growth. For example, now, in the past, India has taken a very strong stand when it comes to the textile industry. Textile is one of the major exports from India. Textile, being a labor-intensive industry, creates immense amount of employment. Millions of people in India are dependent on the textile industry. The last data that I have, almost 45 to 50 million people were employed in India in the textile industry. So this strong lobbying over a period of time, which ensured that India managed to get the World Trade Organization to include textile industry in their rules-based orders. Because of this, India has immensely benefited in terms of the growth from its textile and textile industry. And the textile industry growth went from just about $7 billion in 2006 to more than $37 billion in 2018. So you can, from this, you can understand that when it comes to voicing, stressing, and if you are voicing and stressing a requirement and need at the WTO, obviously it has to be based on facts. It has to be very thoroughly studied and put forth for WTO and the members of WTO to take it seriously. So you can imagine the kind of studying, the kind of lobbying, research, facts, figures which would have been put forth by India to ensure that India's lobbying for textile industry inclusion in the WTO trade rules was taken seriously. And then, in full fairness, India has stood to benefit from it immensely. We see that in the growth of the export. So when it comes to labor intensive industries, which is clearly an advantage, competitive advantage that India has, when we were discussing various theories of world trade in a previous chapter, when it was absolute advantage, comparative advantage, etc., repeatedly we saw that labor intensive industries stood to gain and stood to have an upper hand versus other countries when it came to labor intensive industries in India, because we have this low cost labor. We have a youth, we have a demographic, a population where we have a large, able, youthful, working, able to work population, and hence we can leverage that to push these industries. So wherever it comes to these industries where labor intensity is required, if India manages to succeed in pushing those at international forums and platforms and charters like the WTO, then clearly we see in the short, medium, long term, we see the growth that has happened as a result of this. Even in the IT industry, when we pushed for and we, so much of benefit from the IT, criteria in WTO was received by India, we managed to import so much of the, hardware. We managed to export so much at beneficial, at very favorable, in favorable terms. And we have seen the way our IT and digital exports have grown. Going forward, digital exports and digital economy are going to, digital trade globally is going to be a very, very important factor in India. Being the knowledge-based economy that we have become, we have managed to use IT and digital skill set to become a globally respected knowledge-based economy. Because of that, it's going to be increasingly important for India to keep lobbying for this, for favorable terms in the international charters, so that we stand to keep benefiting from our IT exports and digital exports and not lose out on that competitive advantage that we have. So we are going to learn a little bit about the goals, objectives, the functions, of your WTO and GATT. And over and above, we saw in previous chapters about World Bank, ADB, etc. So likewise, what are some of the major initiatives, how WTO, GATT, etc. operate. Let's look at that. Now, I was talking about India being a very strong voice. Now, also, India is a very outspoken and strong member when it comes to being a member of the G77 countries, where India is a very strong voice for the developing nations and for the needs of the developing nations. So already I mentioned about textiles, where India was a very strong voice. Now, another element where India has been a very strong voice is with respect to certain concerns, raising certain concerns with respect to agricultural industries, and especially with respect to farm output, where farm trade, where India feels that for a populous country like India, in terms of food security, in terms of pricing, in terms of our trade, we have to have a strong voice, and we have to try to get more favorable terms in the rules of the WTO. Now, here clearly developed nations have a different point of view, and we have our developing nations where very often it is India and China which become the stronger voices. Now, individually, if you see India and China, as we have spoken about in previous chapters, individually, there are tensions between India and China, even though China is our largest trading partner, having overtaken the US in recent years as our largest trading partner. Yet, we have tensions with China when it comes to border security, when it comes to cyber security, when it comes to competitiveness. Having said that, as far as population is concerned, India has just overtaken China as the most populous country. China, also being, you know, the second most populous country, again is immensely impacted with issues of agricultural related trade, because again they have close to 1.3, 1.4 billion mouths to feed. Same as India, which has 1.45 billion people. So food security becomes extremely important. Pricing of food, international trade rules and modalities with respect to agricultural items, with respect to food security, becomes extremely vital for India and China, and can actually, even the slightest adverse terms can severely impact our growth and trade balances, and of course the social situation in the countries. So despite tensions on various other fronts, India and China have been very strong voices when it comes to raising these issues of farm trade, raising these issues with respect to agricultural items and concerns with respect to the regulation there, and raising issues where, there are cases of food stockpiling, etc., which India and China have taken up very strongly, which adversely affect, the food security in India and China. So India and China have jointly been very strong voices in the WTO with respect to that. And WTO, while, of course, these issues are going to be addressed over a period of time, but WTO has acknowledged and respected, India taking this stand and voicing these concerns very, very actively at these international forums. The last meeting was in Indonesia. At the meeting in Indonesia also, India and China were very, very opinionated when it came to this issue of food stockpiling and, what could severely adversely impact the food security in India. So the US had refused to ratify the Havana Charter. As a result, the de facto trade organization was the GATT, which is the successor, and successor to GATT is the WTO since January 1995. 98% of the world trade goes through the WTO. Specific to India, as we have been talking, being a member of WTO has definitely really benefited India. Over and above labor-intensive industries like textile, over and above us being very strongly vocal as far as food security is concerned, as far as agricultural food stockpiling concerns regarding agricultural elements are concerned. Over and above that, other industries of India that really benefited from being a member of WTO are financial services. We now have one of the most vibrant financial services industries in the world. Post-liberalization, post-1991, we saw how the industry has grown and clearly India has seen immense growth in this sector. We also saw how much of FDI comes into this sector, thanks to India having been made a very attractive environment and economy for international investment. Now, over and above, textile, financial services, another industry which we know has been absolutely vital for India and where the growth has been phenomenal is the telecommunications industry. We have seen how FDI permitted in telecommunication industry, the opening up of the industry post-liberalization, how it has benefited. We have seen how on a day-to-day basis, in terms of our daily life, forget corporates, forget the larger picture, at an individual citizen level, how the daily life has been impacted because of the growth in telecoms. India has become the second largest telecom market. And even though the figure is, of 2021, we had a subscriber base in India, a mobile subscriber base in India of 1.2 billion. Now, given that our population in 2021 was probably about 1.4 billion, then 1.2 billion out of that was our subscriber base. And out of that, broadband subscriber base was almost 800 million. So that gives you an idea of the complete explosion of the telecom industry as far as India is concerned. And clearly being part of WTO and having favorable terms when it comes to international trade, when it comes to this industry, has benefited India, the most populous country in the world. Overall, at a trade level, if we see, then India saw that we are already the eighth largest exporter of commercial goods, commercial services in the world. Over and above that, we saw that India's trade vis-a-vis the exports, India's trade vis-a-vis, as far as our exports as a percentage of the GDP, of our GDP are concerned, we have seen that India's external trade vis-a-vis GDP has grown exponentially. When we talk about certain smaller countries which have also participated buoyantly in the global trade, we'll see that some of their external trade, now external trade includes both exports and imports, we will see that their external trade vis-a-vis their GDP is actually a couple of 100% as well, but coming back to India, which is still a developing country, we have seen that our external trade contributed in 96, which is a few years after liberalization, contributed just about 23% of our GDP. Today, it stands at almost 44% of our GDP. So you see how being a member of WTO and especially post-liberalization, how our external trade has grown and how as a percentage of our GDP, we are close to, we are at 44%, but that's almost half of our GDP. We have, as a percentage, we have our external trade, which is almost 44% of our GDP. So that is a very, very healthy, extremely healthy figure to be measuring. That is an extremely, encouraging figure to see that we have managed to, despite having influencing voices in the WTO, despite having developed countries which would have their own interest, India has managed to benefit to such a significant extent and leverage those memberships and benefits to have these industries grow so phenomenally. Now, obviously, when we're talking about all these industries growing so phenomenally, then it is not only corporate profit and benefit which has come, but there is also benefit for individuals from an employment point of view, from a lifestyle point of view. When we talk about the IT industry, look at the employment it generates. When we talk about telecom industry, look at the employment it generates. So it is right down from a lifestyle, employment, earning, per capita income increase basis, all of these factors come in and have benefited India, as being a member of the WTO. Now, WTO agreements are negotiated, signed by the bulk of trading nations. As I said, almost 98% of global trade goes through WTO. Clearly, the at a government level, the role becomes extremely important. When it comes to dispute settlements, etc., is also a role which comes under the WTO charter. So they have the ministerial conferences almost once every 2 years. The power is not delegated to a board of directors the way you saw in World Bank. In World Bank, we saw that there was a board of directors and the governors of these board. Different countries had, US being the largest member of the World Bank. Different countries had different number of board members and governors. And then these governors met and also then delegated work to their local executives on site. Now, in WTO, power is not delegated to the board of directors, and most decisions are made by members as a whole. So then you will have your, as we were talking about your meeting in Indonesia, where India took up the serious issue of farm trade along with China. So you have, it is not delegated to member, to shareholders or board of directors, but all members come together as a whole, come together jointly, and discussions are, discussions are undertaken and delegates make their point and decisions are taken by a consensus, which is again very healthy because if you see, then if a country like the US or the Japan has a larger number of board members on the board purely by being a larger shareholder of an organization, then if the decision is being taken by the board of directors, then the decisions may not be as beneficial to other developing nations, and there could be biases which are directing this, which are making decisions being taken more in favor of the developed nations. So here in the case of WTO, power is not delegated to board of directors, and all members come together through discussion, through joint conversation, and by consensus, the decisions are taken. WTO wants to maintain fairness, secure a better balance, open up hurdles where there are hurdles, and also increase competitiveness. We cannot have an environment where there is monopoly. We cannot have an environment where there are unfair advantages. When we were talking about exploitation of poorer nations, then there is this Oxfam study where there are claims of mispricing to save taxation in certain African countries, which was indulged in by MNCs. Now, something like that is extremely detrimental to the region and eventually to global trade as well. So WTO would want to ensure that such practices are not undertaken and there is fairness and competitiveness. of course, some of the other goals become increasing productivity, ensuring that world resources are optimally used, and in general, coming back to our basic goal of poverty alleviation, standard of living, upliftment of society, that happens. Now, when we were talking about tiger economies, and I keep giving this example because it is very close, you know, in terms of geographical layout, these countries are closer to India versus, you know, the Western world. And when we were talking about the tiger economies, then we saw that when their rapid growth happened in these economies over a few decades, that also led to improvement in standard of living, literacy rates, you know, expanded phenomenally. The basic standard of living went up phenomenally over and above just the countries increasing their ranking in terms of participants in external growth or in terms of becoming moving from lower income countries to middle income countries. Some of the functions of WTO are, of course, negotiations, administrative initiative, settlement of disputes, understanding the multilateral, you know, trade relations across cross-border. Each country will have its own rules, regulations, etc. But WTO has to ensure that their standard practices, their standard rules, administrations, their trade rules are assimilated and absorbed and adopted despite the differences in local, you know, layouts, whether it comes to regulations, whether it comes to various other things. There is review mechanism, there is cooperation with, when required, with IMF, IBRT, and various other, you know, ADB, etc., various other agencies to ensure that there is the global economic policy is, global economic policy making is benefiting the desired countries and regions.